This is PhotoBizX episode number 170, and today's special guest is one of Australia's most talented wedding photographers. He built up an incredibly successful business, then gave it all up for a full-time job. I'm talking about Julian Beattie, and that interview's coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the PhotoBiz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. I'm really looking forward to bringing you this interview with Julian today. It has been a long time coming. It's very hard to pin down a guy for an interview when he's working 9 to 5, and his opportunity to record an interview is usually a Saturday or a Sunday when I'm working. But we finally caught up. Yeah, I think you're really going to enjoy this one. Not so much to report in my business this week, but I did take delivery of a brand new Fuji X-Pro2, which I'm very excited about. Now, I'm definitely not a gearhead or a gear junkie, but there is something very nice about getting a new camera, that is for sure. Yeah, I'm looking forward to diving back in with a Fuji for weddings after I wrap my head around this one. It feels and looks awesome, so I'm really looking forward to having a play with it. Yeah, I'm excited. It's always nice to get new gear, even though, like I said, I'm not a geared head or a gear junkie. It's sitting right next to me now, actually. I'm just looking at it. Very cool. All right, let's get on with this.
And now, a macro look at our last episode.
In the last episode, I interviewed Sandra Cohn, the US-based baby photographer who shoots film. I had the best time interviewing Sandra for that interview. Not only do I love her photography, but I love the way she structured her business. And they were really the biggest takeaways for me. The fact that she has so much time to do things outside of her business because of the fact that she shoots film. She does these pre-sales to her clients, which they absolutely love, and they're fantastic for her. And she's selling tangible products, actual prints, real photos to every single client. I just love that. It's a fantastic business model. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that one, get back and check it out. If you've ever been on the fence about trying film or incorporating film into your business, I don't know if it'd be exactly the same as what Sandra's doing, because she really is 100% film in her business. And I think that's what allows her the freedom that she has. But yeah, if you've ever been inclined to dabble with film or revisit it, then I'm sure the interview with Sandra will get you inspired and motivated to give it a go. And if film isn't your thing, just looking at the way she structures her business, her pricing, her packages, her pre-sales, some great takeaways there. Just before we jump into the interview with Julian today, if you're listening to the free podcast, and you are, if you're hearing this message, then you will only be hearing half the interview with Julian. I know, it's a bummer. And you're going to miss out on a ton, because Julian shares some really cool stuff about improving your business, getting bookings fast in the second half of the interview. Because Julian has returned to photography after his stint in the full-time job. And the second half of the interview is where we dive into what's actually working for his marketing right now, how he's re-establishing himself back in the industry and getting the bookings coming in so fast. So if you do want to hear the full interview with Julian, head over to photobizx.com/try. You can sign up for $1. You'll get access to the full interview with Julian. Plus, for the next 30 days, you will be a premium member, fully fledged. You'll get access to the secret Facebook group, which I've got to say is one of the friendliest, most helpful, supportive Facebook group of photographers I've ever been involved with. It really is that good. So you'll get access there. Plus, you can go back and check out the full back catalogue with some amazing photographers who share some incredible insights about their business and what makes it work. photobizx.com/try if you want to give the premium membership a try.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Today's guest is Julian Beattie. He's one of Australia's most talented wedding photographers. And if you look through his portfolio, you'll get a sense of adventure and fun. You'll also see a photographer who knows light, has a sense of humour and a certain style about his work. He also has that rare knack of getting his personality across with his website copy. It's no wonder his couples love him. When I interviewed Janneke Storm back in episode 102, she was just starting out her journey as a professional photographer, and she heaped unlimited praise on Julian for his incredible help and his mentoring. So here's a photographer who looks to be living the dream, yet he gave up the dream for a 9-to-5 job. I've just learnt he's since returned back to photography, so I'm looking forward to hearing more. Jules, welcome, mate.
Thanks, Andrew.
You got to tell us, why did you leave?
Oh, geez. It's a long-winded thing, I guess. But honestly, I originally got into the industry because I saw a market that was missing, you know, I guess, for where I am anyway, Sunshine Coast in Queensland, it was missing a certain style of photography when it came to wedding photography. It was all very, at the time, this is, you know, 8-9 years ago now, it was very old school, very posed, not photojournalistic, and obviously what we see a lot of these days. So I originally got into it because I thought that I had something to add or give to the industry where I was. And somewhere along the way, I guess I always kind of thought, you know, if it ever got to the point where I didn't love it anymore, or I could feel myself, you know, drifting away or becoming jaded or whatever the case may be, that I'd give it up before I began to, I guess, hate it. Like anything that you do that you love, you don't ever want to reach that point where you're sick of it. And I mean, 8-9 years in, and, you know, I was shooting, you know, some years, I hate to admit, 60, 65, 70 weddings a year, back to back, you know, sometimes 3 in a weekend, where Friday was Brisbane, Saturday was Sydney, and Sunday was Melbourne. It was one of those things where it got to the point where I just kind of had enough. So I thought a hiatus was definitely in order.
You sound like you're flat out. That's nuts.
It was. I guess it's one of those things, you bring it on yourself, and as a self-employed, I guess, you know, stitch up in the sense of you have the ability to take as much work as you want or as little work as you want. And I unfortunately have, I guess it's a good thing and a bad thing. I loved it that much that it became hard to say no to weddings where, I mean, one, I traveled so much and I love travel. So if I had a couple that was willing to pay flights and accommodation and car hire and everything that they were willing to do, it was really hard to say no. It was really hard to go, you know, look, for my sanity, health, peace of mind, it's probably not a good idea that I, you know, jump on a plane after I've just shot a 12-hour wedding. And I just couldn't say no. And it's a testament to how much I did love it and still do love it, hence obviously the return. But yeah, definitely was flat out.
It sounds like a drug rehab podcast.
Yeah, a little bit.
So, okay, let me just take you back a little bit. So you were on the Sunshine Coast, you saw this, I guess, opportunity for a different style of photography. Were you already shooting in that photojournalistic style, or you knew that you could go that way if you wanted to? Like, what was the background there?
I originally came from a travel background. I mean, straight out of school, I was on a plane and didn't stop for, you know, a number of years. And I honestly happened across photography just innocently through travel. You know, I was just going places, meeting people, and somewhere along the way I thought, hey, you know, I should probably buy a camera and get some photos of all these amazing places that I was going to and places that, you know, only locals ever saw. And I just started taking photos in a photojournalistic way just naturally, because that's all I knew. I didn't have any, you know, tertiary background that included photography. So it was purely just because of what I, you know, was doing when I was traveling. So when it came to moving home and I had a camera that was pretty decent, and I had, I guess, a bit of a love for it at that point, and, you know, bugger all money into my name, I was like, well, geez, you know, I've got no real skills, because out of high school, from high school to, you know, traveling for 4, 5, 6 years, I didn't have any skills other than bartending, and I definitely didn't want to be bartending. So, you know, it was just a case of, well, I've got a camera, I've got a tool, can I make money from it? How can I make money from it? And then I started looking, and I love doing landscape photography, travel photography, photojournalistic photography, and weddings really do have it all roll into one. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely did have that, you know, photojournalistic approach from the get-go, and definitely wanted to explore it and see if I could implement it into something like weddings.
Nice. Well, you obviously did that successfully. Did the bookings come straight away, like as soon as you shot a couple?
No, it was a catch-22 situation, because as any wedding photographer knows, everything's booked so far in advance. It's kind of when you're first starting out, and I was admittedly stubborn. So I didn't really seek any help or, you know, anyone in the industry for guidance or for how-tos or anything. I literally just kind of dove in, hit the pavement, went through to every single bridal, you know, pretty much anything bridal. Like there was dress shops on the coast where I live that do obviously everything from flowers to dresses to everything. So I just hit the pavement, dropped cards in there. And then, you know, it was just kind of a slow, you know, clawing my way into bookings. And then somewhere along the way, I can't even remember how, after I'd shot a couple, and I mean, that in itself probably is another side note to mention, is the fact that previous to actually shooting my first wedding, I'd never even attended a wedding as a guest. So no, they definitely didn't come, you know, fast and thick straight off the bat. It was just a case of slowly, I guess, learning the ranks and slowly, I guess, keeping on hitting the pavement. And anytime anything came up that was wedding related where I was, I kind of just made sure I was there.
Was there one thing that all of a sudden took you from this slowly clawing away into 60, 70 weddings a year?
Yeah, definitely. I think this is going back, you know, almost a decade. It's crazy to think. But from memory, I eventually, once I guess, lost that stubbornness of, you know, I don't need anyone's help. I can do it on my own. And, you know, the typical younger guy persona that I unfortunately had somewhere along the way, thought, hey, I should probably jump online and have a look at, you know, what else the Sunshine Coast has to offer. And I touched base with a few photographers in the area just to catch up, have coffee, say, hey, and even see, like, because at that point, I'd never been to a wedding. I'd never sat down with another wedding photographer and asked, you know, how does the booking process work for you guys? I've never asked, you know, do you have packages? Like, all I knew was I met with couples and went, hey, what do you want? So I didn't have any bearings, I guess. And once I met with a few other photographers and, you know, they were kind enough to catch up, have a coffee and talk. And they are the ones that eventually were like, oh, you know, you should check out the wedding blogs. And I'm like, what are wedding blogs? Like, what are these wedding blogs? And it's like, oh, it's, you know, a magazine online pretty much. And it's like, okay. And so I jumped online, had a look at a heap of different wedding blogs, and just fell in love with a couple of key ones that I guess were implemental in, I guess, I mean, in hyphens, in air quotations, my success. And yeah, those blogs are kind of the reason that I did get to where I was. So it was, yeah, part and parcel with chatting to other photographers and giving up the stubbornness of thinking I could do it alone, and the online wedding blogs and directories and eventually magazines and so on.
Okay, so you're talking about things like Polka Dot Bride, Hello May, places like that?
Yeah, spot on. I think at the time, you know, Polka Dot Bride, there was a few others. I mean, I know at one point there, when once I started actually contacting the blogs and talking to, you know, the other vendors that were posting on the blogs and getting a feel for what the industry was about beyond just photojournalism, because I remember the first, you know, I'd like to say probably five, but it was probably more, the first, say, five weddings that I ever submitted, they all got knocked back and they're like, yeah, no, that's not what we're looking for. And just talking to them and saying, okay, what are you looking for? You know, what are you looking to blog? What can I shoot more of so that, you know, next time I am successful and get in on the blog? And just slowly kind of developing that relationship. And I guess thinking outside the box too, like I was pretty fortunate enough to build a relationship with a few of the key ones, like Rock and Roll Bride over in the UK, lovely cat. She was the best thing that ever happened to me. She was down-to-earth, cruisy blogger and friggin' awesome. So she was really implemental and I think getting me to where I was purely based on the fact that she was okay to have a conversation. She, you know, told me what she was looking for, said, you know, you need to shoot more of this, more quirky, whatever was going at the time. And then I just kind of, I guess, altered my portraits or, you know, detail shots on the day to match so that they could actually, you know, get featured.
How does that sit with you now? Like, let's say you're mentoring a younger photographer and a blogger says, hey, I want to feature your work, but you've got to shoot different. You know, you're not going to get in the way you're shooting now. Would you tell them to keep shooting the way they want to shoot and the way they feel they should be shooting, or should they change to get published?
Honestly, it's a catch-22. Like, it really is, because at the end of the day, we're all, you know, we're all artists and we're all diehard hipsters at the end of the day, I think, in the sense that we don't want to change. And we think that what we're doing is enough and what we're doing should be enough. And I think it's definitely true. And I think for the photographers that have, I guess it's like anything, you know, if you're a chef, you know, when you start out chefing, you start out mopping floors, you start out doing prep work, you start out sharpening knives, and you get told what to do. You get told how to, you know, how to function, and you learn the basics and you pay your dues, I guess. And eventually it gets to the point where you get to show your own creativity and, you know, artistic side. So I think, honestly, for up and coming photographers, as much as I'd hate to say follow the crowd or follow what other people tell you to do, I think it's necessary in a way to, and it's not to say that you've got to give up everything that you're about, but I think in order to build a relationship, like any relationship, it's got to be give and take. And there's a blog that's, you know, they blogged, you know, 20 weddings in a row where every single one they had, you know, bloody flowers in mason jars and, you know, gold leaf polka dots spread it on the table and all the rest of it. And there's nothing but detail shots of that, but they're looking for something different. You know, the chances of you getting featured are going to be a lot higher if you build that relationship with the blogger and say, well, hey, what is it you're looking for? What would you hope to see land in your inbox? What would make you actually, you know, feature me above, you know, the other 20 blog posts that you've got ready to go? And that's eventually what it got to for me, thankfully. So yeah, I think for the up and coming, you've got to bend a little bit. You've got to definitely give in a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I want to fast forward to what you're doing now, but let's just stay back in that sort of that era before you quit. Talk to me about that. Like, what led you to the actual decision to say, that's it, I'm stopping?
Oh, geez. Lots of things. Like I said, I think the last year that I shot, I think I had like, I want to say 50-something, but I'm pretty sure it was 60-something. And that year, I remember at the start of the year going, look, you know, I can feel myself burning out. I'm going to take a month off at the start of the year, which I did. I'm going to make sure that I've got a holiday booked, which I did. And I'm going to make sure that I only shoot, you know, 45, 50 weddings. And at that point, like generally, I was pretty lucky, like 6 months through, you know, say if it was, you know, 2012, 6 months through 2012, I was already, you know, 30 weddings booked for 2013. So I could see that obviously the year ahead, it was pretty stable. So I could become a bit more picky in what I booked and what I didn't book and so on. But somewhere along the line, you know, that New Year's resolution goal, whatever you want to call it, went out the window. And next thing I had 60 weddings booked. And it was mainly just a home life, work-life balance thing, which we all talk about, we all complain about, we all know about, you know, especially for people that have families, you know, photographers that have kids. I don't know how, you know, you guys do it. Like, hats off to any photographer that's got a kid in a business. Like, you know, they're the true bloody heroes that still manage to do it. But honestly, at the time I was engaged, and my partner and I, you know, I hardly ever saw her because I obviously was working weekends. And with the amount of travel I was doing, you know, Thursday I'd be on a plane to shoot on a Friday, or Friday I was on a plane to shoot on a Saturday, and then usually Sunday coming home, and then, you know, come to Monday when you've got the wedding hangover that hits you and you don't really interact or, you know, talk with your, you know, other half. So, I mean, it was just a realization, I guess, that I'm shooting weddings and shooting other people's lives and happiness and love and all this stuff. And I was engaged at the time, and I guess it just dawned on me that I was spending all this time shooting all this love, and I didn't really have any love in my own life or in my own, I guess, you know, relationship. And I never really spent time with Stephanie, the girl that I was engaged to. So it was kind of just a, you know, an eye-opening realization of, you know, shit, I've got to do something. I've got to, you know, at least take a step back, you know, shoot less, work less, or even just get a 9-to-5 so that I get weekends again. And it's compounded too by the fact that not only did I not see my partner, but I didn't see even my own family, and they all live on the Sunshine Coast, you know. So I think there was one point there where I didn't see my own mother for 6-7 months, you know. So it was just a real, I guess, realization that, you know, holy crap, like, this business is great. It's everything that I've ever wanted, but I can't say no to weddings. So I've got to give it up completely if I'm going to get some, I guess, work-life balance back.
Okay. You mentioned Stephanie there. So did you guys get married or you split up?
We actually split up. So I started working for a company based on the Sunshine Coast, you know, got the 9-to-5 and everything. And I mean, it was a blessing in disguise, I guess, for both of us, because I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, distance makes the heart grow fonder, I guess. And it was amicable as it can be, the breakup and all the rest of it. But long story short, with her, we did get to spend more time together, and that's when we realized, maybe we're not actually meant to be together. So, yeah.
Oh, that's a good way to find out. Better than 10 years down the track.
No, exactly. And that's the thing. If I had kept shooting weddings, we probably would have gotten married and so on and so forth. And, yeah, 10 years down the track, that's never a fun thing. So it worked out for the best.
For sure. You keep referring to, you know, being younger and not as smart as what you are now. How old are you now, Julian?
I'm only actually 27.
You sound like I thought you were 45. Wow, so it's a lot of life experience and, you know, since you've left school or uni.
Yeah, I didn't go to uni. I straight out of high school jumped on a plane. So, yeah, it was a lot of travel and a lot of fun in a very short amount of time.
You quit weddings, or you tell yourself you're going to quit weddings, and you get this 9-to-5 job, got weekends free. What happens when the inquiries come in? What are you telling the inquiries?
Oh, God. Well, that's a funny thing. When it comes to emails and to wedding inquiries and all the rest of it, I was really in two minds because I thought, you know, in one hand, I'll get the 9-to-5, I'll give it a couple of months, and, you know, once the 9-to-5's there and I know how painful a 9-to-5 can be, maybe I'll be inclined to only shoot one wedding a month with the 9-to-5. And I thought I could do both. I never actually booked any in the year that I had off, but it was there in the back of my mind. So I didn't want to take down the website. I didn't want to cut off inquiries or have an automatic reply. I guess it was, you know, as well as that, I didn't want to, I guess, set it in stone either. I didn't want to, you know, put on Facebook, hey, I'm closing down, or put on Twitter or, you know, the website or whatever the case may be that, you know, shops close. See you later, you know, try these guys instead. Because, you know, it's anyone's business. It's your baby and it's what you live for. So it was really hard to actually decide on what to do with that, to be honest. And in the end, I said to a few friends, I mean, Yannicka was one of them, Alan Maria, you know, awesome photography duo. They're in Brisbane. Their name's the Sudons. They're some of the people that I said, hey, look, have my login to my email, any inquiries that I get that, you know, suit yous, feel free to reply and obviously reply and say, you know, Julian's unavailable for that day, but, you know, we're available, et cetera, et cetera. So I pretty much just handed it out to other photographers to not take over in any sense or even shoot under my name or anything, you know, silly like that, but just to be able to, I guess, have the referrals without me having to refer them.
Yeah, okay. So you didn't even access your emails during that time. You just said, just let someone else take care of it.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know if anyone ever actually did, whether or not, you know, Yannicka or anyone else that I gave it out to ever actually took advantage of it. I know Yannicka's got, you know, that much bloody on her plate as it is that I doubt she would have. But yeah, that was the plan because I didn't want to set up an automatic reply to say, you know, hey, it's done and dusted. And I didn't want to, I guess, make that, you know, concrete, solid decision to do it either. So kind of just left it open. And to be honest, a lot of the inquiries that I did get every now and then, probably every month or so, I would sit down and go, I should probably reply to some of these. I just go through and kind of, and it was at the same time too, like, I mean, not to sound cocky or anything, but there was one point there where certain times of the year on a daily basis, I'd get like, I don't know, 20 inquiries. So over a month, you know, you open your inbox and there's 100 plus inquiries. The last thing you want to sit there and, you know, reply to them all. So I ended up just doing bulk replies to the ones that did come through that, you know, were in the inbox every month or two, which I feel bad for at the same time because, you know, client base is a big thing and clientele, you know, I guess deserve to have a photographer that responds quickly and all the rest of it. But yeah, it was a really hard kind of catch 22 decision, I guess.
Yeah. Wow. You turn up to your first day's work, 9-to-5. What's the job, by the way?
Oh God. I don't know if I can even say for privacy reasons or what, but long story short, just working in insurance of all things.
So an office job?
Yeah, just an office job based on the Sunshine Coast, one of the bigger insurance brands in the world. And yeah, I was a few different roles since being there, from just a lowly, you know, hit the ground running company base, you know, advisor through to like a senior position now.
Are you still working there?
Yeah, I'm there at the moment. I want to say part-time.
Well, we're recording this midweek in the afternoon.
I know, there you go. So, yeah, it's definitely going to be one of those things that'll be resignation very, very soon. I kept it purely as a safety net, same as I did, you know, when I originally started out. You've got to have income some way, shape or form to pay the bills. And at the same time, too, I very want to, I guess, slowly dip my toes in the water with weddings again, and don't want to go kind of full hog and then go, crap, I've got 50, 60 weddings again and I'm back at where I was a year ago, you know. So I'm still working there currently. But, yeah, I don't know how much longer that will be for, considering even in the last, you know, couple of months how many I've got booked.
Okay, well, let's get into that in just a sec. When you're doing your 60 weddings before, your 50-odd weddings just before you leave or give it away to go with the 9-to-5 job, can you give us an idea of what the average spend of a client was or what your packages were, average?
Yeah, it's changed over the years. I think originally, like way back in the day, 8-9 years ago, I was, like I said, clawing to get bookings, had no idea of the industry. So I think I started out at something like 2.5 just to show up on the day. Typical shoot and burn. I generally deliver, and it's still true to this day, anywhere from 300 to 600 images, which is pretty low, I guess. And then through to, you know, fast forward to a year ago, I think packages, I only had one, as I said before, pretty stubborn, so it never really changed. I still, to this day, only ever had one package, and it was literally just an all day and night. You know, I show up, you know, when you guys are getting ready, and I walk out the door when it's finished, and I think from memory it was about 4 or 5 that I charged for all day, all night. And then albums were an a la carte style where they could choose to obviously get, you know, their album, parents' albums, et cetera, et cetera. Average spend for most clients that got albums was around 6 to 7. And then for the clients that didn't, they're generally 9 times out of 10 either get a second shooter, a engagement session, or like a sneak peek slideshow edition that I charge for on top. So high-end ones, 6 to 7. Low-end ones, usually about 5 to 50 or so.
Wow, okay. You had a great business. It would be hard to replace that sort of income with walking into a 9-to-5 job. You had to take a big cut.
Yep, that's why I'm here. No, I'm kidding. Honestly, money was never really a motivating factor for me, and it never has been. And even the company that I'm currently working for, the position that I was originally in was in sales, so it was commission-based with the potential to earn, you know, upwards of $4,000 to $5,000 a paycheck, which at the start, I guess I went into it thinking, you know what, I want to do that. I want to maintain that. But once getting into a 9-to-5 job, I guess the typical, you know, I don't know what you call it, to be honest, but I imagine what a lot of people go through when they have a 9-to-5. Because you're going to, it's one of those things. For me, it was going from an 8-9 year job where literally I could wake up at any time that I wanted, Monday to Friday. Do whatever I wanted through the day, plan my own hours, edited when I wanted to. And yeah, like I spent my days spearfishing, doing whatever. So when I went to a 9-to-5, it was like, wow, you know, waking up at 6 a.m. every day or 7 a.m. every day, this is different. And I originally went into the company thinking, yep, I'll smash commission, I'll do sales, all the rest of it. And then I got there and I'm like, you know what, this is like mind-numbing work. And quickly that turned to, yeah, not enjoying it and definitely not going, you know, hard guns as much as I thought I was going to. So, yeah, definitely hard to replace the income when you're kind of, I guess, going from what I was to what I'm, well, I guess any job, you know, short of being a cardiothoracic surgeon or something.
But, yeah. So how long into the job, the 9-to-5 job, did you start thinking, okay, I'm going to think about going back to weddings?
Again, I'm pretty stubborn, so I didn't straight away. I moved up in the company, went to a different role with more money. Eventually got to the point where I wasn't kind of over the new role that I was in, and I was making, you know, 4 or 5 to 5K a paycheck, commission based still.
You're not talking weekly paychecks, are you?
No, that's fortnightly.
That's pretty awesome.
It's still pretty good for what it is. It's a great company, and like I can't fault the job at all. It's just working for somebody else after being self-employed for so long, taking direction from someone else when in your mind you're just like, that's so archaic. Like there's so many better ways that could be done. And you can't say that to a boss. You definitely can't say that to your boss's boss, which I've done many, many times. And it's just, it does not go down well. So yeah, it's more recently, probably in the last, you know, 2-3 months that I, because I've shot two weddings, I think, in the last 2-3 months, just to dip my toes and see. And they're really great weddings to be a part of too, because they were, you know, past brides, friends. It was really great to see familiar faces and, you know, be part of a day that I guess just was familiar. And it was only then when I actually showed up on the day, because I honestly didn't know how I was going to feel about it. I knew that I was going to give it my all. And like I always do, I'm fastidious and, you know, a little bit OCD. So on a wedding day, ask anyone that's ever shot with me, I'm just a little bit too over the top when it comes to timelines and making sure everything's in its place. Not so much with my clients, but obviously with second shooters and things. So it was only when I actually showed up to those weddings and shot those weddings that I was like, yeah, this is what I'm meant to be doing. I'm not meant to be in an office, you know, 9 to 5, 5 days a week. Bugger this.
Yeah. Okay. I want to talk about the new Julian Beattie that's starting up again. But just quickly, like the obvious thing to me, and I'm sure the listener is thinking the same thing, when you had 60 weddings and you're worried about burning out, you've got all these inquiries coming in, why not just double your prices and do half the amount of weddings?
A lot of people have said that, and they said it from day one. A few names come to mind that told me to do that. But at the end of the day, the weddings that I love to be a part of, they couldn't afford to pay double, you know? Like, don't get me wrong, I've shot the weddings where I've showed up and I've gone, holy crap, I could have charged 3 times as much. But honestly, they're the weddings that are, because there's a difference. There's a difference between showing up for work and there's a difference to showing up to do something that you love. And the weddings where I charge what I charge and show up, they're the ones that I show up and go, this is what I love. This is what I want to be doing. Whereas the ones that I could have charged more, they're the ones that I show up and go, nah, there's no amount of money extra that I could pay where I'd go and shoot it again. And nothing against the clients, just against, I guess, the style or the type or, you know, the typical. And I must admit, it was very rare. I think I only had probably 2 over the 300, 400, 500 weddings that I shot. There was probably only ever 2 that I remember that stand out in my mind where they were the type of wedding where I wouldn't repeat. It's not to say that I didn't give it my all and do everything that I could for the clients. But again, it was just at the end of the day, walking out, I was like, that was work. That wasn't love.
Yeah, right.
Premium members of PhotoBiz Exposed hear more of the best photography business strategies from every guest.
Mate, I've got one last thing to ask you. And normally, if we don't get so caught up in the full interview like we just have, it's been awesome chatting to you. I normally have a 10 quick question segment, but I'm going to cut it short and just ask you one question, which is my last one. Have you ever had an embarrassing moment or a stuff up that you're happy to share?
Well, there's probably 2 that come to mind. Early days, I, for some reason, thought it would be great to wear slacks to weddings and quickly realized that they're not that pliable. And when you're up and down as much as you are on a wedding day, yeah, I think probably ceremony, I bent down to, you know, do the typical one knee up, one knee down and grab a lens out of the bag. And yeah, just ripped the seam like right on the crutch from zipper all the way through. And right in the middle of the ceremony. And it was a really quiet ceremony too. So literally everybody heard it and have turned and seen. That's like, great. That's just what I needed as the bride's walking down the aisle. So I quickly swapped to jeans after that.
Fantastic. What did you do for the rest of the day?
I thankfully, really thankfully, it was one of the ones that I was traveling on. So I literally had my bag.
Oh. Lucky.
And I just grabbed a pair of jeans and swapped straight up the ceremony.
Oh, so good. What was the second one you were alluding to there?
Oh, God. It's the only stuff up that I've ever made. God. In probably, I don't know how many bloody weddings, but the only one, and I really hope clients don't ever hear this. And funnily enough, the client that it happened with, she was the best and she didn't even say a word. But anyway, I shot a wedding in Toowoomba and funnily enough, I can't remember the name of the suburb, but the Toowoomba region had 2 suburbs with the same name and 2 suburbs with the same name with 2 of the same street names as well.
Oh, that's weird already.
I know. And when I was leaving the bride's place, I was like, cool, see you at the ceremony, catch you in a bit. And because like Toowoomba ones or ones where I'm flying in where I don't really know the area, as much as I love to be able to do recon, sometimes I just can't if time doesn't allow it, where I've got a wedding the day before and I rock up, you know, middle of the night and whatever. So unfortunately, this one-off particular wedding, and I've made sure that this never happens again. This one particular wedding, I punched in the address for the church that she'd given me, and I've rocked up to this street, and I'm like, this doesn't, like, where's, I don't see a church. There's no church. What is going on? And I'm like doing laps, and I'm like, there's bloody no church. And I'm like, I'd quickly call the bride. Like, it's not obviously something that I want to be doing, but I'll give her a bell. And I've called and called and called, no answer. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And I was like, oh, well, what's the name of the church? And like grabbed out my details forms and all the stuff. And it was literally just the postcode difference. So identical suburb, identical street, all the rest of it. And I ended up just Google mapping it rather than GPSing it. And Google mapped the actual church itself, which was about 30 minutes over town. And sped the whole way there. I don't know how I didn't get a ticket or pulled over. And I just remember driving into the driveway of the church, seeing the bridal car parked, not a guest in sight, and not a bride in sight. And my heart just sank. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I've just, like, flown in, parked the car, jumped out, grabbed my bag and camera and stuff, and I've run in and stopped, you know, just shy of the door and took a deep breath. And I'm like, it's all good. It's fixable. It's fine. Took a deep breath, composed myself, and then just slowly walked in. And the bride's already at the front of the ceremony. And I'm like, oh, this is bad. And I've walked in, just started taking photos. I didn't say a word all day because I thought, look, it's happened. It's done. It's one of those things. It's a freak moment. I don't want to put a downer on the day. I don't want to upset the bride and say, you know, hey, I missed this key thing that all photographers under the sun think is the most, you know, important element of the day. And just went about life as normal, shot to my heart's content, delivered the images, called the bride and like, hey, you're happy with everything? Did you get the images? Yada, yada, yada. And she's like, fucking love them. They're amazing. Thank you so much. Everything's perfect. You took all the photos that we wanted. These are amazing. Like everything. And just, you know, couldn't have been happier. And I'm like,
you're just waiting for a bus?
Yeah. I'm like, do I mention that there's no shot of her walking down the aisle? And I never said anything. She never said anything. And she referred like three or four of her friends to me. Like, so yeah, there you go. You know, the things that we put so much pressure on at the end of the day sometimes turn out to not be important to certain people. Thankfully.
That's great. I would not want to be in your shoes on that day. That is for sure. Oh.
I make sure I do recons every single time now.
How ridiculous having two suburbs, same name, same streets.
Oh, I know. And it was just one of those, you know, spur of the moment, quickly whacking it into the GPS, not thinking twice. But
you wouldn't.
Yeah.
Right. Jules, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. I'm so glad we both persisted and made this happen. It's been a real pleasure. Where is the best place for the listener to check out your work?
Probably just the, I guess, the website, julianbeattie.com.
And that's Beattie with a double T, isn't it?
Yeah, BEATTIE.
Fantastic. I'll add links to that in the show notes and also to your social media profiles and anything else I can find on you when I do some digging.
Don't dig too much.
Thanks, Julian. I'm saying Julian and Jules at the same time.
You're right, mate.
Thanks, Jules.
Cheers, Andrew. Have a good one.
Alrighty, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Julian Beattie. Julian, if you're listening again, mate, thanks so much for coming on the show. It took a while to get that worked out, but I'm so glad we had the chance to actually record your thoughts, your views, and I just know they're going to be well received by the listener. They may polarize the listener. That's totally fine, and I love that. So again, mate, thanks so much. For you, the listener, I would love to read your feedback and your thoughts concerning today's episode. You know, was there anything that Julian shared that you thought, yeah, you know, that's me? Or, yeah, I'm going to try that. I'm going to give that a go in my business. Or did he sell you on the idea of giving up the photography business and going full time? You know, should you just keep photography as a hobby? Did you enjoy it more then? Or have you ever thought about taking a break from the whole photography business thing? Would you ever do it the way Julian did and just drop everything? I can't believe his business survived after all that. Testament to his skills and his personality. And there must be something special about what he does and what he's doing for his clients to still be back in business after that 12-month break. Just awesome. So, yeah, look, if you want to leave your comments, if you want to give me your feedback, or if you just want to say thanks to Julian for coming on the show, head over to photobizx.com/170. And in those same show notes, you'll see some examples of Julian's work. I've got links to anything and everything he mentioned in the interview. plus some other things I'll be talking about in the rest of the show.
Want to know more about Andrew? Follow him on Instagram at Andrew_Helmich.
It was pretty clear in the interview with Julian how important blogging has been to his business. You know, it really was one way, or a big way, that potential clients found his work, discovered him, visited his website, and then went on to book him. I know with that style of blogging, you really are just sending off your photography, your work, with some details about the couple, off to the blogs to get published. And it's usually someone on their staff that writes those posts. But I'm sure you also know just how important blogging on your own website is for SEO, for one thing. And also, it's a great way for clients to get an idea of your personality, the way that you shoot, how you'll be communicating on the day, even the type of language that you use. And I know, and I totally get that you might struggle with blogging. Well, I wanted to tell you about a course that I bought a couple of years ago. It's called Irresistible Words, and it was put out by Jenica McDavitt from Psychology for Photographers. Now, if you are a long-term listener, you would have heard that name for sure, because I interviewed Jenica back in episode 42, and that's when I bought the course. Now, the reason I'm telling you about this today is because Jenica has just announced that it's going on sale at the end of the month, May 31st, 2016 to be exact, and the price is dropping by $50. So it'll be from $249 down to $199. And I can highly recommend this course if you struggle with blogging. So if you struggle to come up with ideas, if you have too many ideas and you struggle getting them down onto the page and into your website, or if you get stuck in the rut of writing those terrible blog posts about previous weddings. You know, I went to Julian Day's wedding in the vineyards. It was fantastic. There was so much love. There were tears and happiness and laughter. It was the best day. I wish every couple was like this one. I mean, if you're doing that sort of thing in every blog post that you write, then you do need some help. You need to inject some kind of spark into those blog posts to make them readable and interesting to the visitors that are going to be coming to your site. So this is where Jenica's course will help. And what I did, I combined what Jenica taught in this course with the things that I learned from Gabriel Mortuere in that SEO episode, where he talked about creating a questionnaire for your brides and grooms and sending that off to them so that they pretty much write your blog post. So now I write an intro using the things that I learned from Jenica's course, Irresistible Words, combine that with my questionnaire that was inspired by Gabriel Mortuere, and I've got easy blog posts that are actually interesting to read that brides respond to. It's very cool and it's very, very easy. So if you do want to check out this course, head over to photobizx.com/writing course, and I'll have links to that in the show notes as well.
You're listening to Photo Biz Exposed with your host, Andrew Helmich.
A couple of other quick announcements before we close out today's show. I have mentioned in the last few episodes, I'll be judging the Shoot the Frame photo competition at the end of the month. This is your last week to enter that competition if you so desire. If you love the idea of entering a competition, or maybe you've never entered one before and you want to give it a go, this is a cheap, easy way to get started in competitions if you want to give them a try. If you head over to shoottheframe.com/photobizx, you'll get the chance to enter three entries for $10 instead of the $15. And they'll be getting judged by me early in June, which I'm pretty excited about. So make sure if you do enter, you don't send me a photo of your entry, because we want to keep this as fair as possible. So yeah, shoottheframe.com/photobizx. And when you get there, you'll see everything you need to get your entries uploaded. Yeah, it's fun. These things are fun. They're probably not going to get you more bookings, but hey, it is nice to enter and receive rewards, even if it's a push to work on a project or try something different or try something new and just be improving.
Connect with Andrew on Twitter. You can tweet him at Andrew Helmich.
A couple of weeks ago, I interviewed Erica and Lanny Mann of Two Man Studios, and it really was a polarizing interview. The comments that have come in since, particularly on the PhotoBizX Facebook page, have been very, very different. There's one half of the fence saying that their approach is crazy ridiculous. Who could possibly shoot as much as they do? Then there's the other side of the fence, and I guess their view in a nutshell is the end justifies the means, you know. And there's one constant throughout the argument from people that heard the interview and seen their work, or even just people that have had a look at their photography. Everyone says the images are fantastic. There's no denying that. And the reason I'm bringing up Two Man Studios today is because I've just seen that they are launching their workshops for the rest of this year and early next year. It's called Balls Out Wedding Photography, a workshop by Two Man Studios. I've got a link to the page where you can get more information in the show notes. But basically, they're presenting right around the world. It's a three-day intensive course. The cost is $3,300 Canadian dollars plus GST, and there's a maximum of 12 photographers in each class. So they're pretty small classes, and it sounds very hands-on, very full-on, and I'm sure you'll get a ton out of the workshop if their approach struck a chord with you and you want to learn more from Erica and Lanny. The locations that they will be presenting are the Canadian Rockies, New Zealand in December, Thailand, Kenya, Colombia, and Romania. Wow. That just sounds like an awesome holiday, doesn't it? Which one would I like to go to? I think, which one would I like to go to? Colombia, definitely. Romania, I haven't been there. New Zealand's gorgeous and it's close. Canadian Rockies, I could go skiing. Wow. Maybe I've got to take the PhotoBizX podcast on the road. Now that's an idea. Food for thought. All right, that's going to wrap up today's episode. Hope you have an awesome week, and I'll chat to you soon. Bye for now.
If you have enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.